Baseball is back tomorrow. The All-Star break ends. Orioles are in Arlington. Remember, Baltimore baseball tonight will be tomorrow at 6. Myself and Ryan Ripken. Joining us now to talk some baseball. We're joined by Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider calls are presented by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Brett is also the host of the Brett Boone podcast, featuring the most notable names in MLB and around sports every week. And Brett, thank you as always for joining us. So both the Orioles and Yankees stumbled to the break. Who are you more concerned about, the Yankees or the Orioles?
This is the first time I think the Orioles have really stumbled. They lost 5 out of 6 coming in, 3 out of 6. It might be a good time to recharge your batteries. Yankees, you know, they could do no wrong for the first 2 months of the season. I saw them a month ago, and I thought I wouldn't want to play these guys right now. But then, all of a sudden, 3 weeks of they had a rough run. I think they had a point where they went 6-14. Nothing was working. I still think they're two of the elite teams in all the game. Baltimore to me is really intriguing, just because of the. I was one of those guys, and I admit it now. I was one of those guys at the beginning of the season, watching them win 101 games a year ago, and knowing they were a talented bunch. They got Burns. He came over. I still didn't think it was enough. I said, this team isn't good enough. I'm wrong. I watch these guys. They're young. They've got youth, and it's that youthful energy. That city's back to being some of the great Camden Yards years where the city's coming out. There's been a lot of lean times there recently. And I just like how they play the game. And there's so many, you know, Rushman and Henderson, Gunner get all the headlines, but man, up and down that lineup, these guys are just tough outs, and they're just good. They pitch really well. Bullpen's decent, but it's just one of the elite teams. I'm not worried about either one of them. I think the Yankees will get back on track. I think Baltimore will get back on track after this break, and when it's all said and done, they're going to be one of the elite five teams in all of baseball. I'd be very surprised if either one of them had a tough time in the second half.
We've been kicking around the notion of, like, we're all conditioned as baseball fans and people who've followed this for a long time to get caught up in who wins divisions, and there's obviously perks that go with it. But how much do you really think it matters? Like, with the schedule being the way it is, and with them adding wild card teams, and with the rest advantage almost being too significant, right? Like, teams are off for too long. Do you really think it, at the end of the day, it's a huge thing, Brett?
I think for the first time in our lifetimes, it's completely not. I don't want to say irrelevant, but not very relevant.
Yeah.
It used to be in my time. It was, hey, we got to win that division. That marathon was really important to hold up that pennant at the end of the season and go, wow. That automatically said you got a chance to win the World Series.
Right.
It's a different ball game now. There's 12 seats at the table. There's more playoff spots than there's ever been in the game of baseball. There's more parity than there's ever been. And from a fan's perspective, I put my fan hat on now. I think it's great. It's exciting. We're talking about baseball in September, where in yesteryear, we're on to the football season. There's 6-7 cities that now are really in a baseball race that would be moved on to football long, long time ago. I think moving the trade deadline to the 2 month versus the 1 month, it really adds a strategic element that I think from a fan's perspective, is really entertaining. It's like, are you going to sell? Are you going to buy? In the old days, it was easy. It's like you knew you were in or you knew you were out. There were buyers and there were sellers. Now everybody's kind of in the middle, with the exception of 4 or 5 teams that we know aren't going to be there this year. I think it's the easiest time ever to get to the postseason. I think it's the toughest time ever to win a World Series. There's so many landmines in that postseason to get to just to get there and then to win it. I think Arizona proved that a year ago. And if you look at that roster, look at their body of work a year ago, they were definitely not one of the elite teams. But I think it's good for the game. I think it's good for more eyeballs on the game. There's more excitement. But more than ever now, and that's why, you know, I watched this Yankee team struggle. I watched the Orioles struggle, winning three out of 10 going into the break. You don't worry about that. Another thing that is plagued today's game that really didn't as much in the past. Yeah, there's always been injuries in the game. But it seems to me, and I don't know if you guys are, it seems like everybody's injured all the time. You look up every day, somebody's having Tommy John. Somebody's out with a hip. Somebody's out with an ankle. That didn't happen in my day. I mean, of course, you guys got hurt. Guys went on the DL. Now it's the IL. But it seems every day, somebody's going on the 10-day, every single day. So I think more so than ever, what's imperative is for the teams that want a shot, they've got to be healthy going into that playoff run. Healthy, good team going into the playoff run. I think health's more important than it's ever been in our game. But to add to, you know, just to finalize that question, yeah, I don't think winning is really the most important thing. It's more about a sprint now and not a marathon.
We're talking to Brett Boone. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. With that in mind, we're 12 days away from the deadline. Are you expecting a lot of fireworks, some big trades by July 30th?
When it comes to Baltimore?
Baltimore and the rest of the league, but yeah, Baltimore first.
I think Baltimore, I think you could add somebody in the pen. Mm-hmm. You know, and who are we going to be looking for that? I don't know, but I think they could add a pen arm. As far as up and down that roster from an offensive standpoint, I think you got what you need. Everybody would always welcome if that frontline pitcher comes along. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it now, and especially the fan bases, and rightfully so, you got to do something. This is our year. I understand that. But in the past, as I mentioned earlier, you're at that month mark. And everybody kind of knows who the buyers and the sellers are. There's not as many sellers as there used to be because so many more teams are in contention. And then the teams that aren't in contention, usually they're younger teams. They have maybe a veteran with a huge number hooked to them on the other end. So it's not as easy as you think just going out at the deadline and saying, oh, yeah, get the guy we need. Well, who, you know, I was talking about from an offensive standpoint for some of the teams around the game that really need some punch, go get an Alonso from the Mets. Go get a Vladimir Guerrero. Now all of a sudden the Mets are in the postseason, so Alonso's not going to be available. So I don't think it's a matter of people wanting to go out and bolster their roster and do better. I just think the volume just isn't there. The product just isn't there because there's so many teams that are still involved at that trading deadline, especially in the National League. You look at the National League, there's only really three teams in the National League you can eliminate. Everybody else is within three and a half games of being a postseason. So who's going to buy and who's going to sell? You're two games out of the wild card race, and you're selling. Man, your fan base is going to have a problem with you. I think it's great for the game. I think it's great for the parity of the game. But the inventory just isn't there how we've seen in past years.
Brett Boone, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Awesome.
That was Odyssey MLB Insider Brett Boone. Insider calls presented by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Coming up next, we head down on the farm. And how much of an impact could Coby Mayo and Jackson Holliday have on this roster down the stretch, assuming they're not traded? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
Swinging a high fly ball by Mayo. The Tides may have their fourth homer to the game already. It's into the bullpen and gone. Coby Mayo joins the party. He has homered for a third consecutive day, and the Tides have hit four home runs in four innings this afternoon. On the first pitch in the third inning, Jackson Holliday sends one the opposite way and a ground rule double off the warning track into the bullpen. In his first game back off the IL, Holliday with a long drive the opposite way.
Some highlights from Jackson Holliday and Coby Mayo. We play these because Mike Elias spoke to the media on Saturday, and he said out loud he thinks both of these guys can have a big impact on this team down the stretch. So, Jason, are you buying that both Jackson Holliday and Coby Mayo could impact the big club down the stretch?
I think they could. The Jackson Holliday of it all gives me a little pause. This young man hasn't played the field since June 12th. And he was a work in progress at second base at the time. And he's only played 38 games at second base this year. It's not like he's played 80, 90, 100 games there since when they sent him down. Again, I saw it with my own eyes. The third and fourth to last games he played in the field, I saw up in Scranton. Was not impressed mm-hmm. at second base. Didn't look natural. Lateral movement, backtracking, his timing. It still didn't look. He looked like somebody who was thinking through it. It did not seem natural. It did not seem instinctual. Now, the kid can obviously work counts and walk and get on base. We're talking about somebody who, you know, gets on base over 40% of the time. So that would help because their on-base percentage of among all major league second base is last in the majors. I don't know about the power and the pop. Yes, he's got a 900-plus OPS in AAA, but ballparks are – pitching's better. Ballparks are bigger up here. It's just – you're traveling – It's different. You don't have 6-game homestands all, you know, to bank on all the time. The caliber of pitching is much better. So I don't know from a pop standpoint, but like he's only stolen 7 bases this year. Like this is a kid who's led off there all year.
Mm-hmm.
He's attempted to steal 7 times. Now maybe they don't want him doing it because they're worried he's going to get hurt. But this team runs all over the place, so that gives me a little pause. The fact that he hasn't even DH'd 4 straight days since he had this original injury gives me a little pause that he's going to be, you know, called up all of a sudden and impact the major league team. The fact that they only looked at him 10 times, 10 major league games before they sent him down tells me that they think it was pretty significantly poor. And they talked about him needing to see more left-handed pitching. He's got 87 plate appearances against lefties this season at AAA. 235, 391, 412 slash line. So it's 803 OPS. Like it's eight, you know, it's not that big of a difference between lefties and righties, but we're still talking about 87 plate appearances. Is that, you know what I mean? Has that solved their concerns? Has that really shored things up?
Well, my concern about it is he hadn't played second base and he ain't coming up here if he in this hypothetical rabbit hole to DH.
No, he's not going to hit for enough power to want him to DH.
No, he's not a DH. I don't know. You've seen him more than I have.
I mean, he's also struck out 85 times in 74 games down there. Now, again, he walks, he works counts. The guys who can throw 96, 97, 98, who come in on him and go up on him, that's elite velocity has been a problem for him to get. Even last year when he was dominating the minors to a better degree than now, like that's something that he's going to have to prove he could do. And he was clearly completely overwhelmed
when he was here.
I felt like he was starting to make a turn for the better. I would have let it ride out more. They didn't. So I guess what I'm saying is that doesn't entirely pass my sniff test. And we're not going to know about Kobe Mayo fielding the ball at the major league level until we see it with our own eyes. But I mean,
his bat's a different
thing. This kid's played 127 games at AAA. 286, 387, 561, 948. Okay, it's a freak show. 111 RBIs in 127 games at AAA. Like, we're talking about 70 extra base hits in 127 games at AAA. He's been at AAA for a calendar year. I mean, this year, 301, 381, 602, 983 in 65 games at Norfolk. And they obviously have a deficiency. They don't have anybody from the right side who drives in runs.
No, they don't.
Unless it's a switch hitter batting from the right side.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Austin Hayes not producing runs. Ramon not producing runs. Mateo not producing runs. And if they were to trade Ryan Mountcastle, then you don't worry about the defense as much at first base.
Yeah.
But I think that needs to happen. And you know what? I think he's going to hit so well that you live with some of the growing pains at third base. The Jackson Holiday of it all, the timing of this injury, and now a week off. No, there's no minor league baseball this week. They're on hiatus just like major leaguers are. They don't come back to the weekend. You really tell me they're going to thrust him into a pennant race until or unless he's played at least, wouldn't you want to think like a month more down there? 38 games at second base.
So, yeah, you would think so. Though the interesting thing is, if he were to be traded, he's going right to the major leagues whatever.
That's a bad team that needs a shortstop. Yeah. That's going to take the lumps now because they're not competing this year or probably next year anyway. Like, or at the very least, he's going to start playing shortstop for their AAA team for a little while and then bring him up here. But
most likely, he's going.
Like, I'm still very high on Jackson Holiday, but to think this team's pretty damn good. Mm. Think he's going to come up here at age 20 in what's been a staccato, It's been a weird year for him. Everybody thought he was going to make the major league team. He didn't. He's down there for a minute. He's up here for a minute and a half. He's down there again. He's struggling in the field. He even goes through his first real AAA slump. He starts to come out of it. He gets shut down. And now the GM's talking about him being one of the missing links in the second half.
The only way that happens...
I don't buy it.
And I want to tell you, I'm going down a big hypothetical rabbit hole here. But the only way he's up here is if Ryan Mountcastle gets traded, because that puts Jordan Westberg at third base and Kobe Mayo at first. And that's, to me, like, there's this hypothetical rabbit hole where Mayo stays, Holiday stays, and Mountcastle goes. And you bet Jackson Holiday ninth and play him in second base and think he's going to work through it. And the rest of this lineup with Mayo at first base and Westberg at third base is going to be able to handle things until he figures it out, batting ninth and playing second base. That to me, is the only way he's helping this team up here.
Yeah, and I mean, with him from the left side, like, even is he going to displace Jorge Mateo? As much as Jorge slowed down,
yeah,
Jorge still has flashed some power, and Jorge in the field is a whole different deal. Like, could Jackson Holiday help them having a second half on base percentage from their second baseman that's above 254? They're on base at second base is 254. Yeah, but they're 10th in slugging percentage at second base. They're 6th in home runs in the majors, 20th in RBIs from second base. Like, he's going to be batting ninth.
Mm-hmm.
Is he really going to be altering the span of their run construction? I mean,
I'd roll with it. He better be running more if he's up here. Like, you bat ninth.
Better be running all the time.
Yes.
This kid
yes.
should be stealing 35, 40 bases.
Yes. You bat him ninth. You play him at second base. And now this is, again, a huge hypothetical rabbit hole, but that's the only way he's here. Like, because otherwise Westberg's at second base. Because Mayo's coming.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions about the whole Jackson Holiday.
Unless,
I wonder how significant the injury really is.
Yeah.
I wonder if this was just a great way to get him off the infield dirt at a time when all these scouts are going to be kicked into overdrive, picking people apart before the deadline. And again, the idea that I would lump him in with Kobe Mayo, given the fact the kid hasn't even played a game in the field in over a month.
You think he's talking to other teams?
I think he's sending signals. Yes. I think he's talking this kid up because he wants it to sound like it's the hardest thing in the world for me to have to get rid of him. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I wish he took the second base in a way that I thought he would, but he hasn't.
Inside Access here on a Thursday. Coming up next, we switch to the Ravens, and the Ravens hit the practice field on Sunday. That is the start of training camp. With that in mind, as we hit training camp, six-pack time, six biggest Ravens strengths right now. We'll give you ours next here on The Fan. Training camp begins on Sunday for the Baltimore Ravens. Their first practices are coming up on Sunday. Most of the guys are probably already in the building as they get ready for this whole thing to start. With that in mind, six-pack time. Our six-pack of the Ravens' biggest strengths as training camp begins. And Ben, let's get started. Six, I have Justin Tucker. Hey, like, he's not what he used to be, but he's still a Hall of Fame kicker, and he's still one of the top kickers in football. And they still, not to the same extent as maybe a couple years ago, but they still in regular season games play the game slightly different because they know they have that guy on his side. I put that at six.
I got to tell you, I struggled with individual. I did not put many individuals on my list. I ended up kind of looking at it a little bit more holistically.
I did too, in some parts.
Because I kind of like, for a team that this much is expected of, I feel like there's a lot of unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
My six was resources. And by resources, I mean upgrades to the facility, upgrades to the creature comforts for players, upgrades to the support staff. Basically, Bisciotti and those guys looking at all those F's on D's on their NFLPA report card a few years ago and making some important changes to how these guys are strength trained, weight trained, right? The changes they've made to the when they practice, how they practice. I feel like it's made a difference, and there's still plenty of teams that don't really care about that stuff, that aren't trying to find ways to improve on the margins. So I put those resources and upgrades at six. A five for me is leadership, culture, the sort of legacy of that being a locker room that can handle its business. Now, they've lost guys like Calais Campbell in recent years. Like, I'm not going to tell you that it's at an all-time high, but when you've got a Mark Andrews on one side of the ball, when you've got a Roquan Smith on the other side of the ball, there's a lot of guys who understand what it takes to sort of rein their teammates in when they need to be reined in, to basically handle their business. And again, that's not true across the league. There's a lot of places with a lot of shenanigans. So I think their leadership and culture are major reasons why they could have success this year.
We're along the same lines, but I put, like, in leadership is concerned, I got John Harbaugh at five. Like, he's been their head coach since 2008. I think he's still one of the top head coaches in all of football. And we, you know, we live in this culture now where everybody wants their coach fired. You know, the same thing's going on in Pittsburgh. But if John Harbaugh was let go, if he wanted another job, he'd have a new job pretty quickly. I think there's something to be said for keeping things. And remember when Billick left, Bisciotti said out loud he wanted a similar thing like they have in Pittsburgh. He didn't want to be hiring a new head coach every few years. And John Harbaugh, except for the blip in 2018, and he went to Lamar, and it saved his job. And now that this thing, I say there's something to be said for consistency. I'm higher on this than you are, but I got Derrick Henry at four, and I think he's going to make a huge impact. And I thought you made a good point, or you and Jeff together. Just having him in that backfield, I think, is going to do wonders for the passing game, just the threat of Derrick Henry. And I still think they're going to be able – I don't know what year two is going to bring, but I think they're going to suck the juice all out of this orange. I think they're going to get a big year out of Derrick Henry this year. I have that at four.
Four, I've got blue chip defensive players. Like, I wanted to go like roster overall, but I still have questions. I don't think they're as deep as they were last year. I have serious reservations about offensive line and pass rush, but they've got a spine. When you've got Kyle Hamilton, when you've got Justin Matabike, you've got Roquan Smith. That's a pretty damn good starting point. And the blue chip players on defense, for me, remain one of the reasons why you should be bullish about them.
About in between right now. I like Justin. The Justin Tucker point's good because I feel like because he's not as great as he once was,
sure,
people take it for advantage. And at the same time, we watched teams around the league lose games on kickers all the time, regularly, yes, and filter them through. Whether you're getting Tucker's best or even where he's at now, it's still very, very professional from your kicker.
We were talking about the Ravens' six biggest strengths entering training camp, and Ben, let's continue.
Three for me is health. There's a lot of teams in the league that are dealing with major injuries right now. The 49ers had a linebacker get hurt in the Super Bowl. Don't know when he's coming back, right? We've talked a lot about the Browns and their quarterback situation. We've talked about Joe Burrow coming back from a significant injury and sounding like a guy who might be contemplating his football mortality in ways that we never thought he would in year four. These guys got what? They got whatever this Marlin thing is.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing anything else?
No.
I mean, Ajabo got hurt. Yeah. I mean, he's never done anything anyway.
No.
So, like, but that happened so early that he should be fine. Like, there are a lot of teams. This guy's on pup. This guy's on pup. We don't know when he's coming back. It's Keaton Mitchell,
yeah,
and Marlon Humphrey. That's a pretty clean bill of health kicking off camp in 3 days.
You had part of this as your four. My three is their spine on defense. Matabike, Roquan Smith, Kyle Hamilton. You've got three all pros right there. You can't discount that their spine on defense is exceptional.
Yep.
Two is their tight ends. Like, we're expecting, and even Jeff Srebeck referred to this when we were talking about this earlier, like, Isaiah Likely took a step last year, mm-hmm, and he didn't have the opportunity to do that with a healthy Mark Andrews, who came back as a decoy in the playoff game. Like, Mark Andrews healthy, Isaiah Likely healthy, this should be a thing in 2024.
It should be. It hasn't been to this point. It didn't make the cut for me. Two for me is their organizational hierarchy. Like, I don't agree with a lot of stuff the GM does, but, like, you've got, and the owner has botched plenty of things, but ultimately they're a winning franchise way more often than not. You still have a football savant in Ozzie Newsome hanging around the draft, hanging around free agency. You've got an owner who has won. You've got a head coach who's among the most distinguished and accomplished in the NFL. They've got a lot of adults. They've got a lot of guys who've had success, and they have continuity. Yeah, they've lost coordinators and that stuff. It's going to happen. But their overall organizational hierarchy, I think, is one of their greatest strengths. You got a quarterback in this league, you got a fighting chance. If you've got one of the five or six best quarterbacks in this league, you got a fighting chance every single year, not just to get in the dance, but to do damage in it. We all want to see Lamar have Lamar games, plural, in the same playoff run. But he is their biggest strength in getting back there.
Yeah, we're simpatico. Lamar Demetrius Jackson has won two MVPs. He has accomplished everything he can accomplish in the regular season. He's led them to a one seed twice. The Ravens never were a one seed before. All he's got left is we got to see it in the postseason.
Got to happen in January.
He's a top five quarterback. He's won.
That's a big W for the Ginger Gorilla.
Well, thanks, Sharky.
I was in between on a lot of them, and most of the points that you guys made together were big. But I sided with Ken slightly with the tight ends at the end, because I think that's massive this year. But the quarterback one is one I wanted to touch on just because the city, I understand he's getting paid a lot of money, and I understand whatever they want to complain about, but they don't understand like what it would be like if we had Drew Locke and Geno Smith battling it out to see who's going to be starting week one. Like, they take that for granted, and if they want to go somewhere else like they did for all that time, it doesn't make sense.
Well, if you're hung up on the money, he's already a bargain.
Yeah.
He's already been jumped by guys who aren't as good, and there's one in Dallas and one in Miami. At least one of them is probably going to jump him, too.
Yeah, and
maybe
Jordan
both.
Love, and Jordan Love's going to
jump. Well, Jordan Love probably does. Jordan Love, to me,
he's really good.
But, like, that's... The billionaire ain't sweating at night about what he's paying the quarterback. The quarterback's more than worth it. Got to get it done in the postseason.
Coming up next, we're going to hit the hot corner, and we got some polls to pay off. We're looking at of course, is it imperative to win the AL East and reset our conversation from yesterday? Should the Orioles consider trading Jackson Holliday for Tarek Skubal? That's next here on The Fan. As we await for the season to restart tomorrow, that's in Texas, Baltimore Baseball Tonight will be tomorrow. Myself and Ryan Ripken, as we'll take you till 7. The Oriole game doesn't start till 8. Alas, as we get restarted, the trade deadline is now 12 days away, Jason, and we've been talking a lot about potential trades. And one of the ones that has garnered the most conversation is potentially making a blockbuster trade to get Tarek Skubal and including Jackson Holliday in said trade.
Well, you're not getting Tarek Skubal unless, you know, a Mayo, Jackson Holliday, a Basayo is involved in the trade. And I actually think Kobe Mayo, they've had a lot of, like, Spencer Torkelson was allegedly supposed to going to be a third baseman.
Yeah.
Then that was never going to happen, and he moved to first base, and now he's back in AAA, and he might just be a DH.
And he's not hitting there right now.
And he's not doing great there. They thought Colt Keith would be their solution at third base. He can't field the ball enough. He's starting to really hit for them now at second base. Like, they drafted Jace Young as a second baseman. I don't even know that he's going to stay at second base. He might be a first baseman. So the defensive issues with Kobe Mayo, like, I don't know. Or potential defensive issues. Like, I don't know that he would appeal to them as much. I think Jackson Holliday absolutely appeals to them. They just gave Javi Baez $150 million. Mm-hmm. He can't play. And he's got 75 still left on that thing, or 125, 75 still left on it. Like, they need a shortstop badly. They do have a kid in high A, a high school kid they took last year, who looks like he's going to be the real deal, but he's years away. And he could always move to second base or the outfield or whatever. Look, they also need a center fielder. There's plenty of people who think Jackson Holliday can play center field. Like, they need help up the middle. They need spine. And I think Jackson Holliday would have to be in the Tarek Skubal trade. You and I are way open to it.
Yes.
Beltway Ben is way open to it. And we talked about it a lot on yesterday's show. And as of right now, our poll at IA1057 The Fan, The Orioles are reportedly sniffing around on Tarek Skubal, as they should be. Yada, yada, yada. Jackson Holliday's blocked at shortstop here. Would you be willing to deal Jackson as part of a package for Tarek Skubal and bullpen upgrades? We're 2,200 votes into this thing. 49% gotta do it. 51% can't do it.
Maybe our biggest baseball poll that we've done, and it's basically split down the middle.
Yeah, I mean, it's close. There's a little less than 2 hours left on that thing. So we'll see. We also had a poll up earlier this week about adding some pop offensively. If you thought that was necessary, should they go big for a Lewis Robert or a Jazz Chisholm? 24%. Go medium, my guy Ian Happ, 26%. Go small and just rent Tommy Pham, 16%. 33% said we don't need a bat at all. And then we had another starting pitching poll about what should Elias do. Add a righty and a lefty, 23%. Add Skubal or Crochet, 66%. Just add a number four or number five starter, one starter, 11%. That's a pretty sizable margin for a three-option poll. 66% add Skubal or Crochet.
Yeah. The Crochet, and hey, if I woke up tomorrow and they had traded for Crochet, I'm giving him credit for taking a big swing. He's got some concerns, though, because of the inning situation.
But I would be willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that they will construct a overarching plan for each start, for the final 2+ months of the regular season, for the offseason, and then how to relaunch him next year, which would be an even bigger step. Coming back from his first year as a starter, having pitched all those additional innings, and then still trying to get him through all of next year as well, you do have the fallback plan of, if you need to back off, he's perfectly comfortable pitching the ninth inning and looking pretty filthy there, too.
Yes, absolutely. And he currently leads, I think, baseball in strikeouts, at least the American League in strikeouts. So, kid's having a hell of a year. We also have one more poll, which is going to lead into our next segment. And that's about how important it is to win the division. Orioles won the division last year. Of course, we saw all three teams in baseball that won 100-plus games did not get out of their first round.
Yes. Is it still the primary objective? Is winning the AL East or securing the top seed a top priority? Is it a big deal? 53% say yes. Is it a little deal? 41%. No deal? 6%. We both voted little deal.
Yes.
I was a little surprised by Brett Boone's response to this when I asked him, because he's, you know, old school. His dad's been in the game forever. His brother's been a manager. He's been involved in the hierarchy of baseball teams. Again, they've got a dad and a grandfather.
Yep.
Like, they're pretty tried and true. And division, winning the division was always your number one thing you checked off in spring training. And even he was like, I don't think it matters much.
Yeah, he said, I'm not going to say it's irrelevant, but
it's certainly not the end all and be all, and it's there's a case to be made that this Orioles team, still being pretty young, maybe they relax a little more on the road. And they're very accustomed to winning on the road. They've been one of the better road teams in the league the last couple of years. And if they don't have a Skubal or a Crochet, it's a pretty good chance that the other team's got a better left-handed starter than you do, which will work against you. Potentially, since you have Baltimore and they don't.
And that's what we're going to get into next. Jim McCarthy from The Athletic is going to join us at 4:15. But coming up next, how important is it to win the AL East? How important is winning a division in the new baseball playoff system? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.